UVA basketball beat rival Virginia Tech to stay one of the hottest teams in the league going into Saturday's big showdown against number 7 Duke. We're going to talk about that and so much more this week on the first episode of Teal and Barber. Welcome in to episode 1 of Teal and Barber, the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Richmond.com's new Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the paper, and I am thrilled to be joined by the 13-time Sports Writer of the Year, the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, David Teal. David, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to this. We're going to air these every Thursday through basketball season, give you guys a chance to hear our thoughts on the two teams in the area and really the entire league. And I think we can go and say that the entire landscape of college basketball, because certainly, David, you are pretty well acclimated with that topic.
Yeah, I would think so. I've been following it for a few years.
Just a couple. So let's start, and what a great time to kind of launch this podcast. Let's start by looking back at last night's game between Virginia and Virginia Tech. And I know it's the cliche to say the tale of two halves, but David, what did you see in that first half when Virginia holds Virginia Tech to just 11 points?
11 points, Mike, on 1 of 13 shooting from beyond the arc. And I sensed in the building, there was just this pent up hope that at some point a Hokie would make a three and unleash this wave of offense. And it just never came. I mean, they missed their first 8. Landers Nolley hits the 9th, but then they missed 4 more before intermission, and they're down 15, and you're thinking, my gosh, this might be worse than it was in Charlottesville back in early January. And then, you know, the script totally flips after intermission, and the Hokies get 42 in the second. And it's just sports. I mean, to try to make sense of it is preposterous because it didn't make sense.
Now, you're being a little humble because you said basically who would think that this would flip that way. But you told me, watching that game, you said, I still think Virginia Tech comes back. What did you see in that absolutely dreadful first half of offense that made you think, hey, this game is going to get flipped and Virginia Tech's going to get all the way back into this thing?
Well, let's be clear, Mike. That was not wisdom talking. That was stubbornness. Because before the game, I thought Virginia Tech had a great chance to win simply because, you know, you're playing your rival at home. And yes, Tech is staggering here late in the season. But I just thought if there was one night that the Hokies were going to rise up and summon a really memorable effort, it was going to be last night. And yeah, clearly it didn't happen in the first half. Not that they didn't get some good looks, but a lot of those shots were rushed and challenged by UVA, as they often are. But yet I still just had this odd hunch that it was going to turn a little bit. And sure enough, it did. And it did in a hurry. I mean, they hit their first 3 from beyond the arc after halftime. And then it was game on. And let's give all credit to Virginia as well, because they took a punch and actually lost that lead and fell behind, but still managed to win.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, defensively, do we blame Virginia for what got going there with Virginia Tech, or was that just one of those moments where a team gets hot shooting?
I think it was a combination of both, and certainly Tony Bennett leaned toward the former. He was blaming his team. He didn't think the closeouts were good enough, and I'll leave it to his expert eye to be the final judge on that. I thought they were a little late on some closeouts in the first half, and the shots just didn't fall for Tech. And once they did, you know, it did unleash that wave that I had thought maybe we'd see throughout the game.
And you mentioned Tony Bennett's expert eye on the shot by Kihei Clark. Kihei's bringing the ball up, and Tony is clearly gesturing for him to come to the sideline like they're going to call a timeout. And then whatever it was, whether it's the timing or something he saw or just changing his mind, he backed off. He didn't call the timeout. He let them play. What did you see in that final sequence? And more importantly, Philly. What does it say about this team and where Coach Bennett is with his trust in them?
Well, it reminded me of the end of regulation of the national championship game. When after Texas Tech made the free throws to go up three, and Tony again disdained the timeout, and Ty Jerome comes off and runs a little screen action and draws a defender and finds DeAndre Hunter open in the right corner for the tying three-pointer. But that's a veteran team playing in the national championship game. That's DeAndre Hunter, Ty Jerome, and Kyle Guy. Those three cats are gone. This is a far different squad, and yet he did back away from it and let him go. And Kihei Clark, as it turns out, you know, made the right play. And Jalen Cohn was on him defensively, and he told me after the game, Cohn did, that his primary aim defensively at that point was to keep Clark from penetrating. And if he was going to take that kind of a shot, a step back three, he closed as best he could, which he did, and it didn't make any difference.
And that's fantastic, because I'll tell you, conversely, Kihei Clark, when he got the ball, he told me he was definitely going to take that shot, and he expected Cohn to take away the penetration. He said, they're going to expect me to get into the lane, to go to the rim. He said, if it's there and they play it the way I expect, I was going to take that shot. Now, I think it helps probably that the game's tied, so if you pull up and shoot it and you miss, you still have another chance. I want to ask one more thing about the Virginia Tech comeback. And you know, we talked about the three-point shooting, and that's obviously what gets them back, but they did it without really Landers Nolly. They did it without really Nyheim Alain, who are the two get-hot, microwave, really start cooking three-point guys. What does it tell you about maybe the rest of this cast that maybe we have overlooked some this year?
Well, I have been for much, if not all of this season, Mike, just an unabashed Tyrese Radford cheerleader. I mean, I love the guy's game. I know he didn't score a ton of points last night, but he did tie it up with the layup there late in the final minute. I think he helped him. You know, obviously, Cohn came off the bench and hit a couple of threes. And let's not ignore Virginia Tech's defense. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Alain and also Hunter Couture. The two of them in tandem did a great job on Wolde Tensai last night. They really got in his space and crowded him on the catch. And Wolde Tensai went 1-for-8, 1-for-6 from the floor. I don't think but one or two of those shots, Mike, was a really clean look.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's really what's turned around Virginia's offense, is the presence on the perimeter of Wolde Tensai, of Jay Huff, Casey Morcell. Virginia as a team went 6-for-21. So they pull out a great victory in a tough setting, in a rivalry game. Any concern, though, about the three-point shooting that, you know, as soon as it comes, is it on its way out?
Yeah, this is never going to be a consistently good three-point shooting team, I don't think. I think we have too large a sample size through however many games they have played now. What, we're up around 30, aren't we? 27 games. They're just not going to be a 38 to 40% three-point shooting team over an extended period. I just don't see it. So sure, I think there's some concern there. You know, Diakite gave him great presence, you know, in mid-range and in the interior last night. And I'll tell you what else struck me, and it wasn't in the quote-unquote crunch time, but it was more around the five-minute mark when Tech was really starting to draw close. The Hokies hadn't gotten the lead. But on, and this wasn't successive possessions, but I'm sitting here looking at my notes. But Braxton Key, Diakite, and Wolde Tensai both went to the line with the student section going nuts right in front of them and, of course, screaming for bacon. And all three of them go 2-for-2 from the line. I thought those 6 free throws were huge.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And those are the kind of shots you're going to need in Greensboro in the NCAA tournament, assuming that, which I think we do, assuming that they get there. You mentioned Mamadi Diakite. He had a really nice game. He's been probably an all-conference caliber player for all of the year, really, for UVA. I'm curious who you got as we take a little break from this game, and who you got for the ACC Player of the Year right now. And I know there's still some games to be played, but right now, who's at the top of your ballot?
It's a great question, because I think you can make a case for about four different guys, maybe five. Well, I think Nwora has played himself out of player of the year just with his recent slump. But John Mooney's double-double machine, both Vernon Carey and Trey Jones are so critical to Duke. And I think Elijah Hughes is, and he was great again last night, apparently, as the Orange just, you know, boat raced Pittsburgh up there on the road. If I were voting today, I would probably vote Carey. I'd have to think long and hard about it. But with three games still to play for most teams, I am wide open for player of the year.
And there's a couple of big games left for some of those guys, so they'll have a chance to impress, or the opposite, a chance to cost themselves some votes. It's interesting that you mentioned John Mooney. Just getting into your head a little bit as you think about that question, does the fact that Notre Dame isn't atop the league standings, isn't one of the big three or four, does that hurt John Mooney's candidacy?
I think in some ways it does, just as it might Elijah Hughes's candidacy. I think back to, this is hardly the only case, but one that immediately comes to mind, is when Eric Green from Virginia Tech led the nation in scoring that year when the Hokies themselves were just having a really down season. But he split player of the year honors that year. I think he was the media's choice and the coach's choice, if memory serves, with Shane Larkin at Miami. Now there's not those separate ballots, and it's just one. It's a combination of coaches and media.
Your memory is impeccable as always, by the way, just in case you wondered. So getting back now to then Virginia and Virginia Tech, and I'll let you pick which team to start with, but you saw what happened on the floor. You saw kind of the direction of these teams, how they've been the last two or three weeks. Who do you want to tackle first? Because I want to talk about where they go from here.
Well, let's start with the Hokies.
Well, let's start with the Hokies then. And, you know, they have really, I think, been on this roller coaster this year where they overachieved early, and maybe guys like me overreacted. And I thought, wow, this is much more than I thought we were going to get in year one from Mike Young. Maybe they've now come back to earth, come back to what we should have expected. What have you seen kind of from beginning to this point?
I think you hit it. And the phrase that comes to mind is regression to the mean.
Yeah.
And this is what we thought Virginia Tech was going to be. And Mike, they're sitting here at 6-11 in the league. Let's say they scratch out one more. I don't know which one it would be. But I believe if you polled Virginia Tech fans before the season and told them your squad's going to go 7-13 in the league this season, I'll bet you 3/4 of them, if not more, would have signed on the dotted line right then.
They would be smart too when you consider what they lost, the coaching change. And what have you seen from these young guys then that says, okay, hey, they are better than maybe we expected this year? What do you see for the future though? What does this program look like under Mike Young?
Well, I mean, their four leading scorers are freshmen, and I think that bodes really well. You know, they've got the transfer sitting out. They've got recruits on the way. You know, they need more size, clearly. But Ogiako shows potential. That, you know, there's some size. You know, I like the way the Hokies are trending. Yeah, they've lost 8 of their last 9. That's enough to discourage anyone. But you know, I think the early returns on Mike Young should be, and certainly are in my mind, still quite favorable.
Do you have a good handle of what Mike Young basketball is going to be at Virginia? Because obviously, you know, he comes in and this first year is about blending what you have with what you want. Do you have a good handle of what Mike Young basketball is going to look like in the long term at Tech?
Well, I don't pretend to have been a devoted follower of Wofford Terrier basketball, but I'll tell you what, I got an eyeful last season, maybe one game during the regular season, a couple times during the Southern Conference tournament, and then in the NCAA tournament. Now, this is all on TV. None of this is in person. And I just thought it was so much fun the way they played and spread the floor and shot the three, and he recruited shooters and he recruited ball handlers, and he trusted them and he let them go. And man, they were good. And man, they were fun to watch. And I think that's what he aspires to do at Virginia Tech in the ACC. And I think it's doable. You just have, it's all a matter of, can he find the players?
We talked about one of those players in Landers Nolly, and he struggled here the last few weeks. What have you seen? Is it, this isn't going to work? Is this a shooting slump? Is it, what do you see in Landers Nolly right now that he's not the guy that's taking over games that he was earlier in the year?
With all shooting slumps, Mike, to me, so much of it is between the ears. It sounds cliche, but when those shots stop falling, it gets in your head and you worry about all kinds of things. Is my form off? Are my feet wrong? You know, what's the problem here? Is it just bad luck? Is it good defense? I mean, there were, I think his first one last night, he didn't miss it. It was wide left. I mean, it was like a bad field goal attempt. In football, you knew it was off, you know, from our vantage point, and the vantage point being used in a very sarcastic way. But as we were looking at the basket, you could tell that it was going to be wide and by a good margin. But, you know, but some of the others were right on target. But he just strikes me as a young man who's struggling and just he's going to have to figure out a way to shoot himself out of it. Whether that happens this season or not, I don't know. But I think in off season, presuming he does come back to Virginia Tech, and I certainly don't know what he and his family are thinking along those lines. But if he does stay in school, I think an off season will do him wonders.
Respectfully, he'd be crazy to leave, wouldn't he?
Well, I always make it a policy never to interfere in family decisions. And that's what those things are. From a strictly basketball point of view, I think your point is spot on. And unless he truly just wants to go play overseas or play in some kind of developmental league, I don't know that he's good enough right now to even be in the G League. But, you know, that would be up to the NBA folks. But yes, from a strictly basketball standpoint, I think he would be very well served to stay in college.
You are far more diplomatic than I am. That was a well-handled answer. One more thing on the Hokies before we start talking about where Virginia's headed. When you think about this team and Greensboro, how important would it be if they could fight their way? I think they mathematically can still fight their way off that first day. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, especially if they beat Clemson. Because then they'd own the tiebreaker over Clemson with a sweep.
How important would it be for a team like this to avoid that first day? And with their three-point shooting, the way they shot it in the second half, is this a team that could surprise some people in Greensboro?
To be counterintuitive, might they be better off playing Tuesday? Just simply because the opponent wouldn't be as good?
More likely to add a win to the resume, certainly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, I don't think anyone is delusional enough to think they're going to be playing Saturday night. for the championship. So unless you think that is possible, maybe the experience of a postseason tournament victory might do wonders for a young group. So I don't know that avoiding Tuesday for this particular team, for some programs and some teams, absolutely it's essential. But for Virginia Tech, maybe not so much.
Well, one of the teams that would like to be playing on Saturday in the championship game, and I think has rounded into form where we'd give them a shot at it, is Virginia. What do you see in terms of, hey, we knew where this team was going to be in terms of what they lost, right? They lost three guys to the NBA. They lost a key guy in Jack Salt. They had that glow of the champions, so they were ranked fairly highly when the season opened. I thought a little bit overrated. Have they played themselves to what we expected, or have they played themselves maybe a little beyond?
Well, what were they picked in preseason, Mike? Their national ranking was too high. Point very well taken. And they were picked fourth in the league?
Yes.
Yeah, which may be exactly where they finish. Now, this team finishing fourth may be as much about the state of the conference as it is is the state of the roster. Interpret that as you will. I think it's pretty clear there. But yeah, clearly they're playing their best basketball at the right time. And that's a credit to the staff. That's a credit to the players. And they absolutely, because of the way they defend, and because Wolde Tensai especially is such a streaky shooter, could they get to Saturday in Greensboro? Now that they've secured themselves a bye into Thursday's quarterfinals? Absolutely. Selfishly, of course, and I've mentioned this to you, we just want them to stay in that four seed so they play at 2:30 on Thursday and get the first semifinal on Friday.
What a difference one position in the standings can make for us sports hacks, right?
Well, those of us bound by deadline, absolutely.
So when you look at what they've done, and you mentioned, obviously, this is a year where the ACC isn't as deep as it's been, maybe doesn't have as many really great NCAA tournament caliber teams as it's had. But hey, somebody's got to win those games, right? Somebody's got to finish fourth. And the fact that they've done it, what's allowed Virginia to be that team?
Well, I think an improvement offensively. I think Clark is playing better as the season has progressed, becoming more and more accustomed to the burdens he had to inherit once Ty Jerome left. He became the primary ball handler and occasionally the sole ball handler. And he strikes me as the type of young man who takes it so seriously and really feels that personal responsibility. And when he makes a mistake, I think he tends to get a little down on himself, particularly with the turnovers. And it's almost like playing cornerback in football. You have to have such a short memory. Okay, I screwed up here, but let's not do it again. And let's just move on to the next play. That's so much of what sports is about. And I think he's getting better at that. We've mentioned Wolde Tensai's emergence. That's been key. Braxton Key has become, I think, more and more consistent. He's almost good these days, Mike, it seems, for around a double-double. He's going to be in that 8 to 10 point, 8 to 10 rebound range. He's uncanny on the glass. He's so valuable there and so good. You know, his ill-timed almost goaltend at Pitt notwithstanding.
It's interesting you bring him up and we think about Diakite, some of what Clark can do driving to the basket, but so much of that has just been enhanced by that perimeter shooting. Perimeter shooting, we talked about it with Virginia Tech, it can come and go. Can this team win a game, win games in Greensboro, win games in the NCAA tournament if it's not hitting from the outside?
Well, they did last night. overall, I mean, 6 for 21, that's below a third. So that's not very good. And they still managed to do it on the road against a rival. Now, albeit against a rival that is struggling. They're certainly not going to make a living that way. Could they get away with it once? Maybe, depending on the opponent and depending on how that opponent shoots on that particular day. But twice in a three-day stretch, like you would need to do to, say, get to the Sweet 16 or beyond, I would doubt it.
I don't want to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but it has a little bit of the feel of that team that got beat so badly by Florida, where there just wasn't the offensive firepower to compete. And sometimes I look at this team and I wonder, like, hey, the defense is going to get them some great places, but if the shooting is off, I just don't see sort of a path to victory. Let me ask you, have they done enough to be an NCAA tournament team at this point, or is there still work to be done?
You know, I look at their last three games, Mike, and think they could lose them all. I don't think they are, but Duke and Louisville, granted at home, but it's still Duke and Louisville. And I think at Miami is very tricky. But yes, I can't imagine them not making the feat. I think their credentials are pretty solid. And because I don't think they're going to lose, say, their next three in the regular season, and then their first game in Greensboro. If that were to happen, then I think there could be a conversation, depending again on, and this is what so many people tend to forget this time of year when there's all this bracketology. Well, if so-and-so wins this game, are they a lock? And my answer is always, it depends. Because it depends on what happens in other leagues and what other bubble teams do. And are there bid thieves in leagues that, you know, take away a potential at-large? So you never can know just for certain what a team's NCAA fate is. You just can't.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's not an official criteria, and no one will ever say that this plays in. But to me, with what they've done, being the defending national champions, I think the committee wants the defending national champions in, assuming that they're in the worthy discussion. And I do think that that'll help put them over the top. I mean, I just think if you're the NCAA committee, you know what that team can do in the postseason, albeit different personnel. I think they get a little bump from the pedigree of winning last year.
I think if only this. Just in the back of the committee's minds. I'm not even sure it would be a purposeful nod to the defending champions, but I just believe that because of the relentless success that the Cavaliers have had over the last seven seasons, that yes, it would just be natural in human nature for a group of 10 people to almost take a default position and say, okay, if it's Team X against Virginia, then let's pick Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, Virginia's name sounds good this time of year when you're talking about basketball. Let's step away for a second and talk about, we're going to do something we're going to call Take It or Leave It. And I want to ask you, college basketball officials, now they can get help making the calls, the replay system. We've seen how that works. We've seen how it can impact games. We've seen how it can help them get the call right, which is the idea. But we've also seen how there can be a delay, how it can kind of muck up the flow of a game. So, David, take it or leave it, the current replay system, the way it is in college basketball.
I will reluctantly take it simply because I'm not sure there's a better way. Because if you completely do, our good friend at the Roanoke Times, Aaron McFarling, he's gone completely the other way on this, and he's just anti-replay. Let's just deal with the human frailty of officials, live with their mistakes, and move on. I'm not ready to go there, but no matter what limits you set, you're going to have the potential for awkward delays. And now, I didn't see this last night because I was driving home from the Tech UVA game. Apparently, the final minute of Maryland-Minnesota was beyond painful.
It was almost unwatchable. I watched it with Gene Wang from the Washington Post, and I, we were sitting there watching it, and we were so into the game, and then we were so out of the game because there's just no flow. And it really is hard to watch, and you want the call right, and you don't want to wake up the next morning and be talking about a game whose outcome was what it was because of a mistake. But man, it is tough sometimes to watch, especially those final minutes of close games where everybody's kind of tightening up and trying to get it right. It's hard to get through those endings sometimes.
Yeah, and you make a very good point when you say they're tightening up and trying to get it right, because you know those officials realize that the cameras are on them and every spectator's eyes are on them, and that's got to be, I'm sure they can literally feel that on their shoulder. It's got to be so heavy weighing on them, knowing I've got to get this right. And I think that just, you know, we often use the phrase, as, you know, because we're approaching the NFL draft and we think about paralysis by analysis. And I think sometimes officials are guilty of that too, as they look at the replay.
And that brings me to something that I really wanted to talk to you about on this first episode of our podcast here. Your first story for us at the Richmond Times-Dispatch last week was a behind-the-scenes look at the ACC's command center on a very busy, I think it was a Wednesday night with five games.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about kind of the idea to go there and how that all came about.
Well, it's just an idea I've had, and it really all it took was a text exchange with Paul Brazo, the senior associate commissioner for men's basketball at the ACC. And you know, I've heard about the command center. I know Paul and his top deputy Lee Butler often watch games there, and I thought it would be kind of cool to take in a set with them one night. And I texted Paul and he said, "You are more than welcome. Why don't we shoot for this Wednesday when there are five games in a 4-hour window?" And I was like, "I'm there." And it turned out to be a pretty memorable evening, including the Hokies triple overtime loss to Miami. Turned out officials missed a call in that game that they should have consulted replay on, with Tyrese Radford's shot from behind the backboard that should not have counted, and then end up forcing, I believe it was the third overtime, because I think his bucket came late in the second overtime. I believe I have that right. It tied the game at 88, but that should have been a turnover. The ball should have been ruled out of bounds. But just to watch, you know, the impact of technology, and to get a feel for what Brazo and Brian Kersey, the ACC supervisor of officials, just what they're looking for when they watch games, and player conduct, and sometimes even spectator conduct and coach conduct, and just how the whole process works.
There's so much going on, and there's so much for them to be aware of and thinking about. What was the mood like? I mean, is it tense work night? Is it like laid back? You're all hanging out watching games? Is it somewhere in between? What was the vibe?
I think it was much more the latter. I mean, it was like watching games with your buddies now, absent the alcohol. I mean, it was really, you were just hanging out watching ball, and yeah, you were saying, "What's he thinking? Why is he taking that shot?" Or what, you know, "What's this coach doing?" And you know, you're not being cruel to anyone. You're just being a fan watching the games. Now that they might be looking for other things, but at the end of the day, they're basketball fans just like we are. And you know, Paul and I had already had a bite to eat, but poor Lee hadn't. He'd been home with a sick child for much of the day, so he brought some dinner to the office and was having a little grub during some of the games. And they're in constant communication, and they're also multitasking. They're doing other things, and Lee's doing some ACC tournament prep on his laptop while we're watching games. But no, the mood was not tense at all.
Now, I encourage everybody to go read that story. It was, I think, February 20th by David Teal at Richmond.com. The headline is "A Peek Behind the Curtain Shows a Frantic Night in the ACC Command Center." I set that up because here's a spoiler. I want you to tell the story about Brazo and recruiting Tim Duncan, because I thought that was just such a cool story. And I think if you could share it with the listeners, they'd love it. But I encourage them to go to the website and read the full story as well.
Yeah, it was a funny story, and one that I was unaware of. I mean, I knew Paul had been the head coach at Hartford back in the early 90s. And turns out that before he got that job, and I also knew this, that he was an assistant under Randy Ayers at Ohio State. And lo and behold, at the Ohio State camp one summer, up pops this tall young man from the U.S. Virgin Islands who had family members who were attending another college in Columbus. So here comes this gangly kid who's not very good, but is obviously long and made for basketball. This kid named Tim Duncan. And Brazo remembers him, and then when he gets the Hartford job during the offseason, he thinks, why don't I reach out to that kid? Maybe he'd be interested. So on the first weekend that you were allowed home visits, Brazo hops a plane and goes down to St. Croix and convinces Tim Duncan to take a recruiting visit to Hartford. And but believe it or not, according to Brazo, Duncan's other visits were to Providence, were to Swarthmore, which is a Division III school, thank you very much, because Duncan had a family member who was in school there at the time. And then very late in the game comes Wake Forest. And Brazo said he remembers calling Duncan after his official visit to Hartford and Tim telling him, "Coach, I think I'm going to go take a visit to Wake Forest." And Brazo said, "I'm thinking, why is an ACC school recruiting this? He'll never play." And as he's telling me this story, they are honoring the 95 ACC champions, of which Tim Duncan was a linchpin. They're honoring them at halftime of Wake's game against Georgia Tech that night. And of course, Duncan is now a finalist for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. He's one of the arguably the greatest power forward in NBA history. He'll make the Hall of Fame this year. He's an assistant under Popovich with the Spurs, and he was a National Player of the Year and a multi-time All-American at Wake Forest. And as Brazo closed the story, he said, "If Tim Duncan had come to Hartford, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys."
Can you imagine Tim Duncan at Hartford?
Yeah.
And that would have been, I thought that story was great. And like you said, that was something I did not know or have any idea, but those are the kind of stories that we look forward to you bringing us, certainly at richmond.com and in the paper, and also every Thursday on this podcast. So that's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. You can get all of our coverage of UVA, Tech, and the ACC by subscribing to richmond.com. Our Sports Plus option gives you access to all of it for $6.99 a month, or you can sign up for a full year of the sports coverage that's less than $60. It's the best way to follow your team this March, a great way to support local journalism, and a great way to get more of those kind of stories from David Teal. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer, our do-it-all guy here at the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Teal and Barber is a podcast of Richmond.com and the RTD. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening, and please join us again next Thursday.